on Discord today with I'm so bad. But you never know.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how hard are you going to flip the table if there's technical difficulty?
Ooh, it's got to be a 10. Yeah, solid. Not because I'm worried about creating additional work for you, but for our guests. If we said to them, hey, we don't have any of the audio, that would bother me. Not asking you to re-record. Fine with that.
Sure. I mean, we do have history of re-recording entire episodes.
I don't have a shots fired button on the board, or I would press that.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we
have to send out replacement cards because they were printed upside down.
My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. Today we are joined by Drew Corkhill. He is a UI UX designer with a passion for board games. Maybe most notably, Drew works closely with Gabe Baird of the Board Game Design Lab. Tell us about your Misplay first, Drew.
Yeah, so that one happened fairly recently. We did an update pack for the Rome game that we did a reprint on, and Joe, the designer, wanted to switch the backs of some of the cards so they flipped over better. So we got it correct in the game, but in the update pack, the printers decided to not do what we asked them to do by flipping them the opposite direction and did them like they were for the game. And so everyone who got an update pack got their cards flipped the wrong way. And so we're currently working on sending them back to all the backers with the cards in the correct orientation, so they'll have a better experience.
That sounds like something that is likely to happen to us at some point along the way for us.
I would say that, Mark, but you're right. Drew, here at the Misplay, we love working on our elevator pitches. Give us your pitch. What do you do within the board game design space, and what are you currently working on? Keep in mind, Mark and I are super awkward in elevators.
Ding.
So I'm the graphic designer for the Solo Game of the Month series from Best With One Games, where we crowdfund a small solo board game on GameFound every month. I'm also a game designer with one published game called Small Time Heroes, which is a roguelike deck builder inspired by Slay the Spire. And I've done most of the games that Gabe Barrett has made, give or take a couple.
We're definitely going to want to hear more about your personal game. I'm a big Slay the Spire fan, and I just got my sister ridiculously addicted to it over holiday break.
It is a very easy game to get addicted to.
I've played in person. I really like it too. Before we get to the thing with Drew, today's episode is sponsored by Grimmoth and their debut game, Vermin. In Vermin, you'll trap, bait, repel, and exterminate your way through a swarm of mischievous critters as you race to avoid infestation. Don't be the last to rid your house of vermin. Vermin is launching soon on Kickstarter, and you can get in early. Just visit their Kickstarter pre-launch page and click Notify Me on launch. Mark signed up last week. I signed up a couple weeks before that. It's a snowball effect. Get on board. Head over to Kickstarter and type Grimmoth or Vermin. The thing. I wish we had bumpers, Mark, but we don't. I'm just saying the thing. Today's thing is walking away from our conversation with Drew with a better understanding of what is feasible and what is possible for us as we bring art into our game. Drew, thank you for joining us. Hello.
Hey.
I know from other podcast conversations you've had, Catan and Carcassonne were among the first board games you were playing, but I also know that you played competitive Hearthstone. But my real first question for you is, did you ever play Eternal?
I did a little bit. I quit Hearthstone for a little bit after it got a little too addictive for me, and I decided to just put it away. And so I decided to, of course, pick up another collectible card game. I chose Eternal. I played it for, you know, a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, and it was great, but didn't really get too into it, and kind of put away digital card games after that, and haven't really gone back to them.
That's fair. We have alluded to before, but we played a lot of Eternal card game along the way to this project that we're currently in, and I think we've both hit the point where we have also set it on the digital game shelf and occasionally dip our toes back in when we need a quick dose of nostalgia.
The Misplay previously was an Eternal card game podcast. I wanted to take today, hopefully, what is going to be a unique approach to our series of interviews this season. And Mark, I need a better name for it because I only currently have Noob Series, Really That's Your Question Series, and Clueless.
How about Falling in Their Footsteps?
Falling in, not following in.
You said you didn't like the series title.
I didn't. So, but Fall In?
Yeah.
That could be a thing. Either way, I want to approach this from the lens of, I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm not going to be afraid to ask a question that makes me sound like I don't know what I'm doing. So, Drew, I know you know a little bit about our situation, having been a member of our Discord community. We have a game. It's abstract in nature at the moment. We're layering in a theme. You've heard us talking in Discord about a star theme. We want to take it to crowdfunding this year, but we need art. What have we done wrong already from what you've seen?
Nothing. I think you're actually approaching this perfectly. You focused on your core gameplay. You haven't worried about art until you're actually ready to start thinking about crowdfunding. A lot of people spend money and focus on art before they even have a good game. And they do this because it's really fun to look at good art. And it's really fun to do art direction. But really, like, I feel like they're just procrastinating and potentially wasting money because you don't know if your game is going to go anywhere until you know it's actually good. The one thing I would say that maybe you guys have done a little wrong is calling everything art. I'm a graphic designer. They're two distinct things, graphic design and art. Graphic design is going to be a cost that you will have to look at, and art is going to be a cost that you're going to have to look at. And they're done by two separate people, generally. Sometimes you can find the person who can do art and graphic design, but most of the time that's not actually true.
Separate the roles for us a little bit. I have a vague guess at graphic design is more about the visual display, the page layouts, the kind of like the visual design and technique pieces that go into making a game legible, present professionally. Whereas the art, I'm picturing like the art at the top of a Magic card or your Hearthstone card, where it's really just the creative expression of something in the game that expresses the flavor, the world, the setting, the characters.
Yeah, I think you got that pretty much spot on. The way I look at it is the art's pretty much anything visual that's drawn by someone, and the graphic design is pretty much the rest of it. So taking that art and putting it into the components that you want, or doing the rule book, or doing the Kickstarter page, or placing an icon on a tile. All of that is graphic design, whereas the art is really just the pieces that will go on top of the graphic design.
Well, we appreciate that. I guess we have to rename. We're not the Misplay. Doing it right. But yeah, no, I definitely have that gap between what I think Mark and Drew, you explained it very clear, kind of the difference between art and graphic design. So keep in mind some of the questions that I have for you. I'm really asking you more as kind of, you know, an expert in the field and not necessarily as a specific artist. So with that, before I ask this question, Mark, I have to just let Drew know, we came into this, we have certain skills, Mark. We're educators, we're teachers. You're really good at dance fighting, right? And I'm really good at Mario Kart. Like, there's things that we're good at and we know how to do. I have a little bit of a business background. You play some music. Neither one of us can draw a picture. That, I mean, we came into this totally without that. We've said it before, it's kind of our Achilles. Here's my question. And I think there's other people out there like us. How crazy have I been this whole time, kind of hoping somewhere someone will come across us and be like, oh, I want to be a part of that. I kind of want to start with you guys at the bottom and help you build this game with art or graphic design.
It's not super crazy, but I would also say that it's fairly unlikely that that's going to happen. That being said, the way I started working with Gabe is I was listening to his podcast and I decided to offer him graphic design for free. And so I got in contact with him and he asked me to do a project and he was like, oh, you're actually good at this. Let me pay you. And then kind of that was about 10 years ago and we've been working together ever since. So it can happen. But most people who do this want to be paid.
Jason, we need to pay our artists.
Look, I had always hoped pie in the sky that somebody would just fall out of the sky. But, you know, I was just hoping, fingers crossed type thing.
I will say I do listen to your podcast and I am a graphic designer. So who knows what could happen there.
There we go.
You heard it here first. Welcome to the team. We'll send you the information about the partnership agreement.
Yep. Mark, I have said to you that I don't expect anyone to do free art for us. And in fact, I reached out this month to a couple of artists and gave them some parameters for a sample card. Really, I'd never done that before, and I wasn't sure how to talk about how you ask that first question to an artist without offending, without lowballing, without paying more than you need to. So I was curious, Drew, if you knew, like, roughly, if I'm reaching out to artists for sample cards, what's kind of the right way to approach that?
I think the best way to approach it is just to be honest and upfront and tell them that you don't know a lot about it. And most of the time, they won't try to gouge you with prices. I would say we're probably fairly honest people and we know what we charge. And so come at it with honesty and say, hey, I'm new. What do you charge for a piece of art? Do you charge hourly? Do you charge by piece? I would say hourly is probably more for a graphic designer. Artists generally charge by the piece, but who knows? Maybe someone will charge it hourly. And maybe go in with some examples, like want to see something that looks like this. Can you do that? That will give them a sense of like the complexity you're looking for, the style you're looking for, and it'll give them a little more direction into what you actually want. And that being said, I would say look into websites like ArtStation or go on to BoardGameGeek and find an artist from a game that you like and reach out straight to them and just ask them those questions.
Jason, I know you've also looked for artists on BoardGameGeek and in other places where you can find artists. And I think the missing piece to me is you had a goal of find art that I like and then talk to them about doing our game. I'm wondering, for me, I think where I would want to start is, well, what art do we need for our game? And maybe, Drew, you can share some insight with us either about broadly the process, or if you want to share with examples from your game, how you approach this. But when you're looking to identify what you need art for in your game, I think that's the starting point that I would aim for. So how do you go about itemizing what you need art for in your games or in a game generally?
Yeah, I think the best way to do it is figure out all the components you have and then decide what should have art on it. Obviously, you're going to have a box that's going to need art. Your tiles likely need art. You mentioned cards. I don't know if you have cards, but those will possibly need art. Get your game and categorize it and break it down into components and what needs art and what doesn't, or what needs art and what needs graphic design, if you want to go there. And approach the artist with a good understanding of what you want. To me, your game is abstract in nature, which means it's going to probably have a lot less art than, say, a digital card game. And so thinking of your game as a product is generally what I like to do, and overall getting an overall vision of what that's going to look like. And so for you guys, really considering what needs art, where the art will shine, and go to the artist with a clear and concise thing saying, I need 5 pieces of art for tiles, 3 pieces of art for cards, and a box. Can you do that for me? Or for my own graphic design, when I get approached by someone, oftentimes they'll come to me and just say, hey, I need card art or card designs. And I will say, okay, well, how many card frames do you need within those? And a lot of times they won't even have thought of that as being something different. They'll think that I just need card design, so that's the same thing. But if someone asks for a card frame for a single card, it's very different than someone asking for 50 cards that have 20 card frames. That would basically 20 times the cost of the game, because each card frame is a new design. Yeah, so really thinking about exactly what you need and being concise with the artist when you approach them.
This could be a bad question. But again, that's the whole point of this series and, you know, how I'm framing this, because I am thinking about other designers as well. I'm going to give you a quick breakdown of what we're looking for. We need a logo. We need a box. We need tile art. It's 4 different images for, you know, what is going to be a total of 24 tiles. We need 12 cards with our constellations on it and 3 star charts, which really, I mean, the star charts is really a graphic design thing, because once we have the images for the constellations, then we just need the graphic designer to put them together for the star chart. So in your experience, if this was your game and you were going to an artist for the logo, the box, the tile art, and a dozen cards, I know that this answer is going to be wildly different depending on who you go to. But for just that part, not the graphic design yet, what would you expect to pay?
So the box is going to be your most expensive piece. And with your game, I think it's going to be probably the most artistic piece of it. So I would guess you're going to be paying anywhere from $300 to $500 up to $2,500 for some box art. For the cards, I actually have a couple questions about those. From my understanding, the game is based on patterns that are made of the different colored tiles or the tiles that will have art on them at some point. Are you going to need actual art for the constellations, or is it just patterns made up of your tiles?
True spoiler alert, I'm going to talk to you about something that we've been working on behind the scenes that we haven't really announced yet or brought to anybody yet. So would also love your opinion on it as well. Initially in my head, there's a shape to me, it's always been rocket. When we play, I call that one the rocket. And in my head, when we were going to ask somebody to create a card, and when I originally reached out to some artists, I said, yeah, it needs to show these five positions, but it should also have lines that demonstrate that it is a rocket. So there would be some additional art on the card. However, internally, there's been some really great ideas thrown around that maybe we don't. Maybe we do just keep it as the kind of neutral tiles, because we have this idea that what we can do is make the game a little bit legacy and allow other people to name the cards themselves. So the first person who wins with a particular pattern, they get to name it. So they would write with some sort of permanent marker on the card that this is the name and I get to name it. And that's just what it's called when we play this game. So we have scaled back the art on the card. But also, what do you think of that idea?
I mean, I think it's a fun idea. What one of the things that I know that is great for game design is to like make something visceral for someone. And that's why the legacy games have, you know, gotten as popular as they are, is because you actually, you know, some of them, or Pandemic Legacy, when the first one, you actually rip the card up, and nobody wants to rip a card up, but doing that made them like the game more. And so I like the idea. Drawing on your own game is good for some people. For some people, it's not. But I do think it's a fun idea. So I would say go for it, but maybe also have like rocket in parentheses or somewhere. So if someone doesn't want to do it, they don't have to.
So to answer your question, we're hoping for a limited amount of art on the card.
Cool. Yeah. So then at that point, it's mostly graphic design. If you don't want art, maybe you're getting like a background or a, you know, a space scene or a grass, you know, scene that will be like the frame of your card. You know, two kids looking up at the sky with the constellation above it. So there might be a little bit of art. There also might not be any art, and it could just be straight graphic design, especially because you're doing an abstract game. For me personally, when I've listened to your podcast and you guys talk about it, I think there's a way to do this and make it beautiful and simple without much art, which I think probably helps with you guys not having that much money to spend on art.
Go on.
In my head, what I see of your game, and I don't remember which one of you talked about wanting the game to be beautiful and have, you know, wood pieces and that whole thing. But the way I've seen the game in my head, as you guys have talked about it, is a very simple board that resembles a sky. And then each piece, similar to the ones that Tor made for you, I would use that style of incorporating the UX into it. But I would go a little more very thin line, beautiful star like you would see on like an old astronomy chart. Then those stars will actually look like they make up a constellation as you're putting them together. And so very like dark blues with like gold stars. If maybe you could do a stretch goal where you have some foil on them or something like that, would be kind of cool. But very simple, very minimal, and very beautiful. That's kind of where I've always envisioned your game. Now, it clashes a little bit with the idea of kids gazing up at the sky, because, you know, it's not this beautiful astronomy chart. But I do think the abstract nature of it, it would sing really well to have a very simple and beautiful design for the game.
And we'll wrap it there. Point for the beautiful aesthetic design. Thank you. We'll see you all next week, show.
That has been, yes, that has been Mark really pushing. And look, it's not that I don't want anything beautiful, Mark. It's I didn't want the cost of this game to be over $5. That's where I was. Where would the cost of that game be, Drew?
A lot of it depends on like the components you choose. From an art perspective, not a lot. Like a graphic designer can make icons for you fairly easily. You know, you're going to pay, I don't know, $50 for each of them maybe, versus, you know, $100, $200 for, you know, some beautiful card art. And so I think you can get away with it fairly cheaply if you approach it from the beautiful graphic design aesthetic versus a very illustrated version of the game.
Okay. The last question I have around price is then, you know, we move over to a graphic designer who's going to take a look at the rule book. They're going to move the art around on the cards and help us shape what that looks like. Mark, we've just paid $2,000 for the box. I know you're not happy about that.
I heard 300.
There was a range. I want a nice one. How much do people typically charge for something like that, for the rule books and the graphic design for a game like ours?
Honestly, for your game, I think the rule book's going to be one of the more expensive pieces. It's going to take a lot of time to lay out the type and do the examples. It's fairly time consuming, and I generally charge by the hour. I think most graphic designers do as well. So I like to quote in like a range of hours, and then you know, multiply it by the hourly rate. So I charge, you know, generally, I haven't actually charged much for freelance work recently, but generally like $80 to $100 an hour. I would say a rule book, if you guys are, which you seem to be, are very well organized and have everything ready to go, a rule book is probably going to take 5 hours, maybe. That's probably a decent range, but it could go up to 10 or go down to 3, somewhere around there. So yeah, you're looking at $200 to $500 for your rule book, potentially up to 1,000 or so, but likely not. And then, you know, the star charts aren't going to take long, you know, maybe 30 minutes. Your tiles aren't going to take long. I would say, like, overall, your game's probably going to only take 5 to 10 hours of graphic design, would be my guess, with, the, you know, not counting the rule book.
So what I'm hearing is if we do go sparse on our art and graphic design, we might be able to go a little deeper into the budget for nicer components.
Yes, although what I'll say about that is art is upfront cost, whereas components will be after you fund. And so they don't actually connect that well together, because you're going to pay for your art before your game's kickstarted, or at least some of the art, depending on, you know, your approach. And then once you realize how much money you have from the campaign, I think is where you can determine your component quality. Obviously, you want to go into the campaign knowing what you want, and you can do stretch goals of like, yeah, these are the Bakelite tiles versus the cardboard ones. And, you know, maybe there's a stretch goal to hit those. But I don't actually think art and component quality go hand in hand for the price.
We're glad you're here to clarify that for us.
Drew, I don't know if you know, but one of our goals this month is to submit our game to Cardboard Edison. Have you ever submitted a game to that contest?
I submitted Small Time Heroes, actually. I didn't make it to the final round, but the game is now published, so I guess losing is okay as well.
I've watched some of your videos where you do a gameplay where you play the game with other people. That is a really cool game. I think you would really enjoy playing that, Mark, especially since we talked about Slate Aspire. I know that was an inspiration for you, Drew. What would you say to us as we do something like that? And right now in the initial stage, you just have to submit a video that talks about your game. What would you say we should prioritize right now when we're showing off, you know, the components and some of the gameplay from an art graphic design perspective?
One of the good things about the board game design industry is most games look pretty horrible before they're published. So I would say, don't even worry about it. Your game looks good as it is, especially if you're using Tor's icons that he made you. They're not going to care if you have beautiful art or if you have what you have right now. What I would prioritize is really thinking about the UX of your game and trying to make sure that everything is in the right place to make the game as accessible as it can be to a new player.
The new player experience is something that we've talked quite a bit about. Our testing friends and partners are much more proficient gamers than we are and very familiar with our game at this point. What has your experience been, or what are your thoughts on how do you get new players to test your game to kind of vet that recommendation and understand how accessible the game is to new players?
It's probably a better question for a graphic designer, which I guess I am. What I would say is watch what they're doing when you're playtesting. And if someone is looking at your card and like staring at it for a second and confused by what they're supposed to do, then that's a clue that maybe the way you have your information laid out isn't that accessible or isn't that great of an experience for the person playing. Maybe there's ways that you could make it more clear to them. And so if you make a change and another new player sees it and immediately does what they're supposed to do, then you'll know that change worked. But also, maybe it's something like showing a graphic designer what you have and saying, hey, like, does this look like it could work well? Do you see any problems with what we're showing and how we're showing it? Just showing it to someone else and asking someone who knows what they're doing and asking if they see any problems. But yeah, like watching them play the game, and if they're struggling, if a player is making the same mistakes with the same card, that's an idea that maybe something's wrong.
Let me stop you right there. I'm holding one of our cards. The area that I think you're talking about that applies to us right now, our cards are very simple. It has the five pattern constellation. And then we've been using for a long time, we just have a red line on the bottom of the card. That is to help people orient themselves to how they should be making the pattern, because you can only make the pattern one way, and it gets a little confusing when the board rotates in our game. The star chart doesn't rotate. So what we do is we have a red line on the star chart, and that's been our, that is down. And no matter where you're sitting at the table when you play the game, whether you're across from your opponent or to the side of them, you just match that red line to the star chart, and then that's how you make your pattern. We've encountered some new players, and they didn't understand that that red line means that's the way it has to be on the board. So the best example is the T. To my perspective, it's an upside down T. To Mark's perspective, he sees a T when we play. And so we just use a red line. So that seems like it would be the closest graphic design question and confusion for a new player. I don't know if you have any thoughts on how we're doing that.
I think that's a great way to show what you want by having a line on the bottom of the star chart and on the card. If there is confusion, something as simple as some text that could say bottom on the card, and that would show them not only is this line connected to the star chart, but it also means something. And so a lot of times within user experience design, you're chunking pieces together. And so by combining the line with some text that tells the user what they're doing, that will give them more information and less likely to make the mistake. Another graphic way you could do it is instead of text, if you want it to be a little more graphic on it, you could have the line have like a little arrow on it to make it pointing up. And so now you see a line, but it has an arrow pointing up on it, showing that it's the bottom. So those could just be two small things you could do to orient the user a little better to what you're trying to show them.
When I close an interview with a parent or other service provider at work, or I am ending a phone call with a close friend over the phone who lives far away, I always end those conversations with, what else should I be asking? Drew, what else should we be asking in the spirit of, we're on this path, we're traveling this road to crowdfunding. We are certain there are things that we don't know, and are certain there are things that we're going to be missing. For what you know about where we are right now, what else should we be asking?
I think you should be asking, who is our target audience and what do they want in a game like ours? Figure out exactly the style of games that they like and try and have your game be that.
You're so right. We're over here. We got palms. We got the Misplay logo right now. We're both putting our hands to our head.
Crying on the mics.
You're 100% right. That's just like so spot on, and what we needed to hear from somebody, because I do feel like that is definitely something we have omitted as we've designed this game. I would say it's probably the biggest misplay, the biggest misstep for us, is we have kind of lost who that is.
Did we ever have that?
Well, that's the problem. So episode 4, maybe? I don't know. We should definitely have an episode where we're talking about who our audience is. Thank you, Drew. I agree. That brings us to the other thing, Mark. We mentioned it in the last show, but I want to remind listeners that we have made our crowdfunding roadmap public facing. You can go into Discord, you can check it out. And there's two reasons. It's one, we're on this quest to show you how we made our game. I think we've always tried to be very transparent in what we're doing. And we're hoping in doing this show, in doing this podcast, we're going to help other people who are on the same spot as us. And number two is, we'll take and we want your feedback. We'd be happy if you came in to our roadmap and said, ooh, but But have you thought about this? Who's your audience? Write that in our roadmap. We would love to hear from people to get feedback and advice. So if you're not in our Discord, please find our Discord. There's links at our website at themisplay.com. That's where you can find us, all of our information. You can even find Drew there in our Discord. Drew, thank you for being on the show. Where else can people find you, and do you have any projects upcoming?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun. You can find me pretty much nowhere. I don't really do social media very much. I guess you can find me on the Misplay Discord if you want to get a hold of me. There is also the Best With One Discord if anyone wants to join that and see what we're doing with the solo game of the month stuff. When this comes out, I should have my game up on GameFound. Small Time Heroes is the current solo game of the month, doing a reprint of the base game that funded last year and is getting some fairly good reviews, which is awesome. And there's also going to be an expansion with some new bosses and new heroes for that. So yeah, if you want to check out a small version of Slay the Spire that I put a lot of work into, yeah, go check that out on GameFound.
Thank you again so much for joining us. We know it's a big ask to have people join us on one, from out of your busy schedule, and two, on our kind of night owly times that we tend to record.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's just been a lot of fun. Hope to talk more about graphic design with you guys.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Howley Boy Games. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. We'd like to express our humble gratitude and recognize any level of support here on our list of sponsors. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors. Are you going to read this whole list of questions? None of these questions are about art.
Yeah, they are. There's the cold open. What do you mean none of those questions are about art?
The way it's set up. We want to take it to crowdfunding. There's no mention of art in the setup to leading up into the questions. And then it's broadly, what have we done wrong? We don't have a budget. I see. Number 3 talks about art. I guess number 4 talks about art.
Well, this is where you're going to come into the podcast at some point. Can you move us that way then?
Sure. Aren't you glad I'm here?
I guess. I thought I was talking about art.
Maybe I missed something in all the preamble.